I think let's take up the calendar, and then let's take up Senator Sharon's conference committee report, and then we'll take up Senate File 6. So why don't we, I would move that we, we have to need a call first?
Yeah, you should do that so we get the folks
Mr.
here.
Mr. President, I'd like to impose a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Remaining on motions, we're going to take up the calendar. I think we'll give another minute or so, Senator Pogemiller, to get the folks here. And then we've got about, there'll be about seven votes here in a row, so.
Well, Mr. President, why don't we take up the conference committee report? She'll explain it for a few minutes, and then everybody will be here. So why don't we take up Senator Sharon's conference committee?
All right.
There's a privileged conference committee report at the desk. The next order of business is the conference committee report on Senate File 238, Senator Sharon.
Senator Sharon.
Mr. President, and members of the Senate, I, representing and along with Senator Dibble and Senator Latz, Senator Rosen, and Senator Dill are moving that the foregoing recommendations of the conference committee report on Senate File 238 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Okay, Senator Sharon, you would tell the body what the differences are, what the amendments are.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I'm very proud to bring this back, this conference committee report back on the Freedom to Breathe Act for final adoption. I just like to take a minute to remind everyone that this is an issue that's been thoroughly discussed and through several committees, lengthy hearings. It is, as a freshman, I thought in the initial stages of this that going through a lot of committees was a problem, or meant it was problematic. But I've discovered, really, and learned in the process that the more committees it went through, the more opportunity there was for public discussion and debate, the more certain we could be that the final outcome would be a good public policy for the state of Minnesota. There's been a lot of ground covered. And in the course of the conference committee, we were able to negotiate with the House, and I'd like to go through some of the provisions that have changed so that the Senate is clear about what is in the bill. You should have received on your desk a bill check, which I think does a nice summation of what is included in the conference committee report. It lists the exemptions. It lists the continued support for local government ordinances. It talks about enforcement and other provisions that are included in the bill and what is not included in the bill. But I would like to go and speak specifically to some of the language in the bill to make certain that you know what it is that you will be supporting when you accept the conference committee report. On page 3 of the conference committee report, under the subdivision that describes indoor air, I just want to draw your attention that we did change this language from the bill that we passed in the Senate and sent to the conference committee. As a result of our conference process, we pulled together some of the language from other states. We had a subcommittee working on this, brought some language back to us that we thought clearly improved how to describe indoor air rather than to try to describe it by structures. We talk about it more in terms of percentage of wall coverage. So I want to draw that to your attention. Another section of the bill, on page 5 of the bill, there is a change to the language that related to the psychiatric facilities. This was an amendment brought to this bill by Senator Betzold. And in this provision, what change occurred in the conference committee was to make certain that the Department of Human Services hospitals, the state hospitals, where both the employees and the patients are not allowed to have smoking tobacco products or any smoking occurring in that property, that continues to remain in place. So that the application of smoking or the authority of a physician to prescribe a cigarette in a treatment plan for a patient can only occur in the private institutions, and it only occurs if that institution adapts a policy in order to allow that to occur. Going on then to make sure, my point here is to make sure that you are aware of the changes that have occurred in this bill as a result of the conferees. On page 6, under tobacco product shops, there are some changes. We really took a strong look at this, wanted to make sure that we tightened down the language to make sure that we knew what we were allowing and limiting something that an unintended probability might occur in a tobacco shop. So the language that is new there relates to describing 90% of the gross revenue from the sale of loose tobacco plants, products, cigars, cigarettes, etc., or other smoking devices, and also refers to the fact that the tobacco product shop does not include a tobacco department or a section of any individual business establishment with any type of liquor license or food serving license or restaurant license. Then under Subdivision 5, Subdivision 6, Subdivision 7, Subdivision 8, and Subdivision 9 are all additions to our bill that we passed from the Senate floor. Subdivision 5 allows smoking in the cabs of heavy commercial vehicles. Subdivision 6 and Subdivision 7 relate to some of the unique issues around farming, because farm property, even though it's a home or a garage, is considered a place of employment and is described as employment property in the tax code. So we've included some language to help clarify and assure the agricultural community that they will be able to have the same privileges as others do in the urbanized area. Subdivision 8, Disabled Veterans Camp, there is a specific reference to a disabled veterans camp that we thought might be included because it has as its purpose similar to some of the nursing homes where a person is able to go experience some rest, some relaxation, or maybe see some decompression, and similar to other kinds of provisions that we've allowed for under the hospitals where a physician can prescribe a cigarette as a part of a treatment program. And then Subdivision 9 relates to theatrical productions. This is new also to our bill. It was brought to our attention that there might be an occasion when someone would like to put on a production that has smoking as a part of the actor's role. This would provide that person would be able to use it as a prop, for the purposes of a prop, but it clearly narrows the language so that the theatrical performance is conducted in compliance with law that regulates theatrical performances. And then on the final page of the bill, what is in the final report that was not in our report is Section 14, which says the Act is referred to as the Freedom to Breathe Act. And then finally, the effective date is changed. We were silent on the effective date. What this will do is state an effective date as of October 1st, 2007. The only other thing I would like to draw your attention to is the reference to preemption. And there is some new language that clarifies. And if you'll give me a moment, I'll see if I can find it. No, it's the... It's on page 8 under local government ordinances. What we have done here is add language that makes it absolutely clear that what our intent is to say that except as provided in sections 144.411 and 144.417, smoking is permitted outside of restaurants, bars, bingo halls, unless limited or prohibited by local government ordinances. So the House members really felt that they wanted to have that clearly stated, that smoking under this bill is allowed outdoors unless a local government exercises its authority to restrict it further. And that is a change, a significant change from the bill that the Senate passed. I think that summarizes the essential differences between the conference committee report and the bill that you all authorized, and I would be very happy to stand for questions.
Is there discussion on the conference committee report? Further discussion. Senator Tomasoni.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I'm not going to move to send it back to committee. I'm just going to ask you to not vote for it because I don't believe that we should be doing this. You know, it's pretty interesting that no level of secondhand smoke is safe, according to what we've been hearing, yet in theatrical productions they can smoke. And the reason they can do it is because they're going to put a little notation on the billboard that says, you realize there's going to be secondhand smoke in here. So you as an adult can actually make a decision to go into the theater and expose yourself to some level of secondhand smoke, which is not safe. Well, isn't that interesting that if you have a little billboard on a wall in a theater that indicates that there's secondhand smoke, that adults can then make decisions as to whether or not they want to go in there or not go in there? Isn't that what this is all about? Isn't that what it's all about? That people who walk into bars and restaurants who know there's secondhand smoke in there make a decision as to whether or not they want to go in there? They have freedom of choice to decide where they want to enter. Well, suddenly the bill's changed a little bit. There is some level of secondhand smoke that must be safe because we are allowing it in a public situation. That's pretty interesting to me. You know, members, this is going to kill the very jobs that we claim we're trying to save here. New York has already experienced it. 2,500 jobs were eliminated. Minnesota, Minneapolis, and St. Paul, 115 bars have closed and another 2,500 jobs have been lost. When this gets out to rural Minnesota, the border areas are going to be seeing an exodus of people to the states around them, and bars will close. We will eliminate more jobs in rural Minnesota. This is a bill that is going to do exactly the opposite of what it wants to do, and that is protect workers. It's actually going to eliminate workers' jobs. Once again, this should be something that is individual free choice and not forced down people's throats by government. We're going to eliminate bingo halls as we know them. It's been said that 80% of the people who play bingo in bingo halls are smokers. Charities are going to be seeing reductions in their revenues because people aren't going to be frequenting the places where they buy the pull tabs. And who's going to suffer? The Little League baseball teams, the hockey outfits, all the Boy Scouts, all the places where the charities contribute their money to, they're going to be losing the donations that they've been getting before. We are going to create exactly what the intent of this law was to not do, and that is have a patchwork of laws all around the state. Without preemption in this bill, in other words, every single place in the state is subjected to exactly the same law, and it doesn't change for anybody. Without that in the bill, local units of government will be able to change the law. And there will be another patchwork of laws, just as we have right now, and it's going to create exactly the same situation that we have. The best thing to do would be to vote no and just allow the patchwork to continue as it is right now and let local units of government create their own laws and decide what they want to do. And we even have a provision in this bill that says the local units of government can say it's illegal to smoke outdoors. I mean, that's really scary. And so, I mean, this thing should not be sent back to conference members. It should just be voted no on. And I hope people will join with me and not pass this bill.
Further discussion? Senator Dill.
Mr. President, members, 2 weeks from this Monday is Memorial Day, and that's a day when we honor primarily soldiers and veterans that fought in the wars that this country's had, and I count 12 wars that our country's had. It's about 1 million people have died in those 12 wars. And the wars that I count are the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Mexican War, Civil War, the various Indian Wars, the Spanish-American War of 1898, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the Gulf War of 1991, and now the Iraq-Afghanistan War. 1 million dead from those 12 wars. But in the case of tobacco, depending on how you count it, we lose that many Americans in a decade, or perhaps 2 decades in how you count it. So the Memorial Day coming up 2 weeks from Monday, although it's traditionally a time to primarily remember our soldiers, it's also a time to remember everybody that's passed away, all who have gone before us. And let's remember that in the 231 years that have passed since 1776, the 1 million soldiers that have died, let's also remember the 1 million Americans that have died in the last decade or two from tobacco. And one of the reasons I'm a co-author on this bill and on the conference committee is because I would like to change a culture and provide for an environment in this state that discourages people from starting to smoke in the first place, or to encourage those that are smoking to discontinue that habit, because tobacco is a killer, and it's one of the major killers in our society, and it's time that we continue to change the environment to try to save some of those lives that are necessarily lost. So please vote yes on this bill.
So further discussion. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I'm standing to urge support for the bill. I think the conference committee negotiation was an excellent negotiation, and in the Senate, I'm here to tell you the Senate conferees worked very, very hard to defend the Senate position, both the parts that they supported in principle and those that were added to the legislation as a part of the legislative process. We didn't succeed at bringing all of those back, but we were responsive to the concerns that were articulated through the process on the way, and folks should be aware of that, and I think Senator Sharon did a nice job of describing those. There's concern articulated about the effect that there's going to be on workers. I don't think that is necessarily borne out in the experience in all the other states and countries and municipalities that have passed these, but to be sensitive and to be open to that, we make provisions in the Job Skills Partnership Board and the displaced workers programs that we have. We delayed the effective date of this bill to give businesses time to ramp up. And we made some exceptions that, you know, granted make the bill less than perfect, but they were exceptions in narrow circumstances to recognize unique situations that were requested by those who are less than thrilled by this legislation. And it's interesting to hear now that those exceptions are used as an argument to vote against the bill, but I would say that not all circumstances applied to in every situation, and so we were able to accommodate some reasonable, sensible exceptions for very specific and narrow circumstances. But the bottom line is that this bill will be just a huge leap forward for workers' safety, for workers' health. It'll be an important step that we take on behalf of Minnesotans. It's what leaders and citizens are telling us all around the state that they would like to have for themselves, for their communities, for their families, for their health, and for their safety. And I think ultimately the benefit, we'll see the benefit in terms of our improved health savings and our healthcare dollars. And frankly, I think we'll see a big benefit to business. This is a landmark, historic piece of legislation, and we'll join many, many other states and countries that are part of this effort. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, rise in support of this bill, and I must say a huge congratulations to Senator Latz, who was the author of this bill in the House for many years, and Senator Dibble, who worked on it diligently for many years. You must be ecstatic and, frankly, very glad this is going to pass. This is a great bill, and it's over. And I must say that I'm glad it's over, too. But a huge thanks to Senator Sharon for her grace in maneuvering through this entire bill. She did an excellent job on this. And with Senator Dill, I think the conference committee put out a very good bill. And it is interesting to see that there are some argument with some of the exceptions that were brought forward on this bill that now are being used against it. I am a little surprised. But we should be very proud of the fact that we have done something significant to indoor air, the quality of indoor air, and the devastation of secondhand smoke does to people that are in that area. That's not going to affect people from going to the bars or restaurants because they can't smoke. They go to bars and restaurants for the food, the joy of having a good meal, and for the camaraderie. The reason why I signed on to this bill and the reason why I enjoyed being on this conference committee is because I looked at it as prevention, and not just prevention in the respect of illnesses, but prevention in the young adults and how they're starting to smoke. And I mentioned that before. These kids are learning to smoke in high school, thinking they're going to quit when they graduate. These kids are going to college, and they're going to the bars, and they are going to the bars, and they're picking up a smoking habit, thinking they're going to quit when they graduate. And as we all know, they are unable to do that, or it's very, very difficult. So for me, it was very personal. And my three children, none of them smoke, but it's been verified by them when with their friends that this is exactly what happens. And for me, it's a personal mission to make sure that we can do some amount of prevention for these kids. And maybe it is an inconvenience for somebody who just wants to go to a bar and smoke, but they're also at that bar, they're also at that restaurant for other reasons. And I just ask for a positive a vote on this bill. It's a very good bill, and I think we've set a very good example for everybody in the state. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Senator Latz.
Mr. President, members, thank you, Senator Rosen, for your kind words. This has been a long road since I introduced the bill in spring of 2003, my first term in the House. And it's been a healthy road and a good time for discussion, not only here in the legislature, but throughout the state. And we have seen over these 5 years, community after community, cities, counties, townships, have debated this issue at town forums, in their legislative bodies, the city councils, the county boards. Some have taken action directly to pass local ordinances. Others have passed resolutions calling upon the state to take action statewide to set a uniform standard. This has generated a terrific amount of public debate and public support. Recent polls have shown 69% of Minnesotans support the step that we're about to take today. And that's been reflected in all of this local activity. And now we have an opportunity to bring the benefits of indoor, clean indoor air to all workers and to take an important step to reduce health care costs. Those are the twin pillars upon which this legislation stands. Governor Pawlenty appointed a health care cost reduction task force a number of years ago. It was chaired by former U.S. Senator David Durenberger, a nationally recognized health expert. And they recommended as one strategy for reducing health care costs in Minnesota the expansion of the Clean Indoor Air Act to do exactly what we are proposing to do here today. And there's good reason for that. It's because secondhand smoke is the third leading cause of preventable death in the country. The first leading cause is firsthand smoke, or what some call mainstream smoke. Secondhand smoke is sometimes called sidestream smoke. And a recent study that analyzed Philip Morris's own internal tobacco documents, which are now public, concluded that inhaling sidestream smoke, this was based on studies they did in Germany, their own medical and scientific studies, inhaling sidestream smoke was 4 times more dangerous than inhaling mainstream smoke directly through the cigarette and its filter. And there's good reason for that. Secondhand smoke, or tobacco smoke itself, contains a lot of very serious chemicals. Chemicals which cause heart disease, heart attacks, which cause cancer, and which cause birth defects. Let me just give you a few ideas about this. Acetone, the main chemical in nail polish remover. Lead, magnesium, mercury. We all just passed a very strong mercury bill here earlier this session. Arsenic. Do I need to say more? Cadmium, a heavy metal. Nickel, another heavy metal. DDT is found in cigarette smoke. Polonium-210, which happens to be the results of combustion when tobacco leaves that have been fertilized and pesticide burns, you get polonium-210. Ethanol is found in cigarette smoke. Formaldehyde. Toluene. Vinyl chloride. Titanium. I don't know about you, but I sure don't think any of us ought to have these chemicals in our bodies. And there's been ample evidence that, in fact, it is a serious threat to our public, to our own health. In Pueblo, Colorado, they did a study, and they found that when they enacted a smoking ban, their heart attack admissions in the hospital decreased by 1/3. 1/3. That's a lot of people in Pueblo, Colorado who are walking around today that would not have been walking around if they had not banned smoking indoors in Pueblo, Colorado. The other pillar of this bill is the protection of workers' health. Now, yes, we may be concerned about jobs. And the jobs in particular, in this case, the most significant target of the expansion of this bill into restaurants and bars and service clubs. But I'll tell you, the restaurant and bar industry is the most volatile industry in the country. On average, about 90% of those establishments that open close within the first year under current conditions. But the fact is, the labor unions that represent the workers in this industry support this bill. The Service Employees International Union, HERE, the restaurant workers, they support this bill because they believe that their workers are entitled to the same safe work environment as all other workers. Right now, 90% of those workers in white-collar jobs are protected from indoor cigarette smoke, but only about 11% of those who work in the bar industry are protected. This bill says that no worker's health is less valuable than anyone else's. No worker's life is less valuable than anyone else's. This is our opportunity to take this important step. If we're serious about reducing health care costs, which I would surmise is the number one increasing cost for small businesses and large businesses, and frankly, our state budget, if we want to get our arms around that, we have to take this step along with others to reduce health care costs in Minnesota. Small businesses should be excited about this important step to help reduce those costs on their bottom line. So let's take this opportunity. Let's send this bill out of here with a resounding message to all Minnesotans, to all workers, that we are serious about their health, we are serious about health care costs, and we're serious about making this Minnesota a better place to live, work, and raise a family. Thank you.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you. With the passage of this bill today and the work that Senator Sharon and the other committee members have done, Minnesota will become the 20th state to pass a statewide smoke-free law. And I'm pleased today to be here and offer thanks and gratitude to the folks from Olmsted County who were some of the very early players in this discussion and who have helped to lead the way for this legislation. I concur with the comments that Senator Latz made. We have spent an inordinate amount of time this session and in previous sessions discussing healthcare reform and healthcare costs. And without fail, those things that we can do to focus on prevention are really going to yield large results going forward. So again, my thanks and appreciation to the members who worked on this, and Olmsted County is very appreciative of the efforts.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I can see that people have I think it's part of the process. This has been through many, many committees. People have had an opportunity to speak to the issue. I just want to make note that today, you know, having it be today the 149th anniversary of the state of Minnesota, and to have another historic piece of legislation be considered and approved on this day makes this even more special for this vote that we'll all be taking this morning. And I just am so pleased that the final product, with some of its shortcomings, really sustains what the critical purpose of this bill is about, and that's the protection of the public health, of the public health and inclusion of those workers in those places that were left behind in the past to be protected from the hazards of secondhand smoke. That those who have served us, those that are the most exposed and least protected, are now among the rest of the workers who are protected from the hazards of secondhand smoke. And that even though the bill has some limitations and does not really bring everything to the Senate that we had in the first bill, I know that our committee in particular was looking at it more about creating good public policy rather than maybe winning some points. So with that, I'm hoping again to ask the Senate to rise in support of Senate File 238 Conference Committee Report.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion by Senator Sharon that the foregoing recommendations in Conference Committee Report on Senate File 238 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by Conference Committee. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The Secretary will give Senate File 238 its third reading.
Senate File 238, a bill for an act relating to health, establishing public policy to protect employees and the general public from the hazards of secondhand smoke, etc.
Further discussion. Senator Sharon.
I'd ask for a call of the Senate.
The Senate is under call. Sharon.
I'd like to dispense with the call of the Senate and have the Sergeant-at-Arms bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Is there further discussion on Senate File 238? Senator Latz.
Mr. President, I just want to take this opportunity while we are here in the chamber together to thank Senator Dibble, Senator Sharon, Senator Rosen, and Senator Dill, with whom I've had an opportunity to work on this. Senator Dibble, been working on this together since 2003. It's been an honor to work with you on this. And Senator Sharon, you've done a yeoman's job, if I may use that term. It's been terrific having you carrying this legislation this year, and we can all be proud of the results. Thank you.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just find Senator Dill's comments very ironic in regards to this bill. When you refer to the veterans who fought to make this country free and to give people freedom of choice, and then you equate it with this bill where you're eliminating people's ability to make a choice, just seems extremely ironic to me, and I hope that everybody would understand that and vote no on this. This is not American to not give Americans choice.
There's a further discussion. Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on repassage of Senate File 238. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The secretary will close the roll. There being 43 ayes and 21 nays, there being 43 ayes and 21 nays, the bill is passed and is tentatively agreed to as amended by conference. But thank you for looking out for me.
Where's my motion? Where's my motion? I lost it. Yeah. Oh, I knew I had it.
There, Polgemiller.
Mr. President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate Senate File Number 6, Number 45 on General Orders, a special order for immediate consideration.
Senator Polgemiller.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, Senate File 6, as you know, is the Dallas Sam's Outdoor and Cultural Legacy Act. This legacy legislation has been around nearly a decade. Many people have worked passionately on this over the years, crossing party lines, collaborating. And a few of those people are Senator Bob Lessard, Senator Dallas Sams, Senator Dennis Frederickson, Senator Pat Parisot, Senator Cohen, Dick Cohen, Senator Ellen Anderson, Senator Satvir Chaudhry. The time is to act on this proposal. Today is Minnesota Statehood Day, a good day to deal with legacies. Tomorrow is the Minnesota Fishing Ocean Opener, a tradition, time to deal with legacies. 150 years from now, this might be one of the more significant pieces of legislation that we vote on. I don't disagree with the members of the Senate who believe that we should not do constitutional amendments lightly. Some members believe, justifiably, that we should just fund these things, do it statutorily, raise the money necessary to do it, and do what's right. I was one of those members 10 years ago. But it's become obvious that this generation needs to do something so that the generation after us is able to participate in the type of outdoor activities and the type of cultural activities that we have experienced in our generation, that our parents left for us. This bill creates three funds. It's a three-legged stool. It's not a finance bill. It's not meant to be a finance bill funding everything that we all support. It was very difficult for me personally to ask to remove provisions of the previous legislation that set aside money for particular things. The Historical Society, Film Minnesota Public Radio, the Film Board. Those are things we should fund. But in a constitutional amendment, we need to be more focused. And so this is a three-legged stool, the Great Outdoors Fund, that deals with our hunting and fishing traditions, protects the water. Now you're saying, well, why didn't he say hunting and fishing is under the Heritage Enhancement Fund? Well, because that's specifically what's set aside in the Heritage Enhancement Fund. But clean water, the Great Outdoors Fund, the biggest piece of this piece of legislation, is also about hunting and fishing. Wildlife thrive on water. Fish, obviously. So the Great Outdoors Fund, the clean water portion of this, is the largest portion. It's 43%. Roughly $125 million a year, estimated, for 25 years. The second piece of this, where it started, the roots of this discussion started with the Heritage Enhancement Fund, where the hunters, the fisher people, the other outdoors enthusiasts started this idea about a decade ago. They need to be applauded for their foresight in bringing us to a point where Minnesota considers a set-aside of this significance, about $100 million a year. Finally, there's the third leg, the shortest leg of the stool, the shortest. I would not like it to be shorter. It's the Cultural Legacy Fund. But I believe it is as significant, even though less obvious today, I believe it is as significant to our legacy in Minnesota. With this three-legged stool, Minnesota will do something that has not been done anywhere else. And the cultural legacy piece of that is the fundamental differentiating aspect of it. You don't have to convince people that we should have clean water. Obviously, we should. I hope I don't lose any votes with this, but I was just at the May Day Parade in South Minneapolis, where the entire theme was water. So even lefties understand, hunters and fisher people, even lefties understand that water is the essence. The Heritage Council, the one council that's created in here, is 16 members, but it's dominated by citizen members. Senator Chaudhry has worked very carefully on this because one of the important things for those who brought this idea forward 9 or 10 years ago was to have the recommendations of citizens drive the expenditure. And so it has 10 public members and 6 legislators. The ballot language in the bill reflects the priorities of the bill. Water first. Water, water, water. But then it speaks to, everybody loves water. But then it speaks to the other two pieces, hunting and fishing, which many people believe is a spiritual experience. There's something about the soul involved there. Likewise, with the cultural and the arts, I've said in several public forums that watching a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old fish in your boat and put the worm on the hook and argue about whether it should be a worm or a minnow, there's something pretty soulful about that. Those same two young ladies in their dance recital, there's something pretty spiritual and soulful about that also. This is something that can bring Minnesotans together. It brings vegetarians together with hunters. What is wrong with that? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. This bill asked the voters to dedicate 3/8, a new amount of money, a tax increase, 3/8 of a cent for these purposes. So roughly, $100 million for one solid aspect of our community, hunters, fishers, forestry. $125 million for water and recreation. And then about $70 million for culture and arts. Why a sales tax? Because some members prefer, well, do this with income taxes. Having chaired the Senate Tax Committee over the years, it's become apparent that in some ways voters prefer sales taxes. There's kind of a usage aspect to that. And so the polling indicates in the last 15 or 20 years that regardless of what one's belief is on public policy in terms of progressivity or non-progressivity, voters have a sense that sales tax gives them a choice of some sort. Now, sales tax is not as progressive as the income tax, but it's not as regressive as it used to be. It's not necessarily a bad tax. It's simply just not as progressive as the income tax. And I, for one, would like to protect the income tax for education. So I think the sales tax is the right choice for this, for these legacy items. It's about $56 per year for the medium household income family. The sales tax doesn't include food and clothing, so it's not as regressive as some think. In addition, the sales tax, non-residents will pay 18% of this. So about a fifth, will come from visitors who come to our state to experience our outdoors heritage and our cultural heritage. A good amendment was added in the tax committee that if someday we expand the sales tax, add clothing or food, that doesn't automatically then accrue to this. It would be a windfall. And so the tax committee decided, let's just make sure it's the current sales tax that we're dedicating from. I think that brought some comfort in tax policy that we were telling the voters what our expectations actually were. Members know full well our demonstrated inability to fund in tough budget times our waters and our outdoor activity budgets, as well as our cultural budgets. They have taken fairly significant cuts in funding because, in some respects, they are not as important as education and health care. The immediacy of them is not as apparent. That's why this is like a home mortgage instead of buying groceries. Health care and education is like buying groceries. You need to do that daily, or whatever your pattern is. You need to do that to just kind of keep existing. But a home mortgage is something you buy over the long term. So this is more like a home mortgage. Just as important, but it's a different kind of investment. It's one that you make that's really expensive, but you don't have the cash in the short term. That's why this needs to be a constitutional amendment. I fundamentally respect, and I assume there will be an amendment here today to not do a constitutional amendment. I hope there isn't. But we should not take lightly amending the Constitution. We should not. But this is a mortgage. Nobody has the money that you need on an annual budget to protect this type of long-term investment. If we allow the water to deteriorate further, because we just don't have the money today, we need health care and education. We know we regret the loss. We know it was a mistake. But we didn't necessarily make a bad choice when we chose to eat and take care of our health care first. But we know that we should have protected the water. We know we should have protected our hunting and fishing resources. We know we should have protected our cultural, spiritual resources. That's why it has to be a constitutional amendment. It's not the perfect approach. I agree. Senator Dill made these comments in the Environment Committee. Let's just do it. Let's just do it. I fundamentally agree. Senator Bach and Senator Langseth have made those comments also. I absolutely do not disagree with them. They are right. The challenge, though, is we cannot deliver on that. We cannot deliver on that even though we want to, because it's like a home mortgage. Very few people have the ability to lay down cash for their home. So members, it's not a perfect bill. In some respects, it's not even the preferable approach, because we're going to have to wait a year or two and take the chance that the voters won't agree. But when you consider the circumstance we're in, even if we were able to raise income taxes this year, would we really put that money into this? No, we wouldn't. We would put the bulk of that money into our short-term, immediate needs of education and health care. That's what we would do, and it would be the right thing to do. These are legacy items. The bill has been narrowed down to 3 stools. There are many things we could add to this bill, but I just ask members to consider, what is it that we will remember 25 or 30 or 50 years from now? I think we'll remember if we protected our water, if we protected our outdoor activities and cultural heritage related to hunting and fishing, and if we gave our children the chance, if we gave our children the chance to experience on a deep basis how important music, art, and theater are to a society. What do we remember about the Greeks? What do we remember? We remember their culture. What is the most magnificent thing about the Chinese? Their culture. 300-year cycles of world dominance in China. It's about culture. Members, neither of these three things are add-ons. They're all fundamentally important to Minnesota's future. And economically, not just socially, economically, these three things drive why Minnesota can compete. The Guthrie Theater is important. Traveling to Minnesota to go to our boundary waters, to our 10,000 lakes to hunt and fish is important. And the basic substance of life, clean water, the land of 10,000 lakes, is important. I ask members to put aside the reasons to vote against this piece of legislation. Put those aside. Think about the reasons to vote for it. Thank you, Mr. President.
There are, I believe, 16 amendments at the desk. So with that in mind, is there any discussion on Senate File 6? Senator Parasol.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I would like to offer the 823 amendment.
Was that 23?
823.
The Secretary will report the A23 amendment. Does it say Sengem?
Yes, it does. Okay.
The Secretary will report the A23 amendment.
Senator Parasol moves to amend Senate File 6 as follows. Delete everything after the enacting clause and insert. This is the A23 amendment.
On the amendment, Senator Parasol.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, on behalf of all the people who are wanting this to be a whole lot cleaner bill than it is today, I am offering A23, and it does a few things. Basically, it establishes the Game and Fish Preservation Fund, and there's a constitutional amendment, of course, and it speaks to the content of that, and it also includes the walk-on access program that has been passed already in a bill. And the third thing is that it takes only 0.8% of the current stream of sales tax, does not increase taxes to sweep for this particular purpose. And it is a question that will go before the public. And it has an effective date of July 1, 2009. Sections 3, 4, and 6, and 7 are effective. Excuse me, the sales tax. Sections 1 and 2 apply to the sales and uses occurring after June 30, 09, and Sections 3, 4, 6, and 7 are effective July 1, 2009. And the constitutional question appears on the last page. Mr. Chairman, I move the A23 amendment at this point.
Is there discussion on the A23 amendment? Senator Polk-Miller.
Mr. President. I oppose the amendment, but I want to recognize that this is where it started. This is where it started 9 or 10 years ago. And it's been a long journey. And I simply ask those who prefer, which I believe there are many members, prefer the so-called clean option, to again look at, if you bring more Minnesotans into this, I think you build a bigger hole. And it's my sense that both water and arts, culture, add to a good idea. And I think that makes the significance of this greater. And so I would just ask members to reject the amendment, not because it's not a good idea, but because the three-legged stool is a better idea. And Mr. President,
impose the Senate is under call.
Yeah, I guess so.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogorelli.
I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor please signify by saying aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails. So further discussion on the 823 amendment, Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. President, members, I want to reluctantly oppose this amendment. Senator Parasol has been one of the leaders in promoting funding for more ducks, for more habitat, for conservation. She has really played an important role over the years of moving this whole constitutional amendment forward. Along the way, I think we have realized that there are some other needs we need to address. One of those is clean water. This would not address the very critical need we have for additional funds for clean water. It also does not address our cultural legacy. So, Mr. President, members, I would urge members to not support this amendment.
Further discussion. Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you. Are we Mr. Chair now?
President, we're in the Senate.
Mr. President, I just want members to note that the Senator Pogermiller's bill, Senate File 6, has an important component to it for sportsmen and their clubs. The bill has a local match to sportsmen clubs of up to $20,000. And we devote $5 million out of the Heritage Enhancement Fund to make sure that local sportsmen groups have the opportunity to see that real dollars up close, see the real effect of dedicated funding dollars to their organization. And this amendment would eliminate that. In fact, in my dealings with sportsmen clubs throughout the session, the local grant, matching grant, has been a very exciting part of the dedicated funding proposal in Senate File 6, and has generated a lot of support. This amendment would eliminate that. And there are all sorts of other philosophical reasons that have been talked about in having the arts and having the clean water in here as part of the dedicated funding proposal. So I won't belabor that point. But I would also note that this proposal would also eliminate the clean water portion of Senate File 6, and that's been a widely accepted and important part of the dedicated funding proposal.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the question occurs on the A23 amendment. All those in favor... A roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call vote. Further discussion? Hearing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A23 amendment.
I didn't hear a voice.
All senators voted who desire to vote. The Secretary will close the roll. There being 13 ayes and 47 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 6.
Mr. President.
Senator Olson, G.
Mr. President, I have an amendment at the desk, the A-52 amendment.
Secretary will report the A-52 amendment.
Senator Olson G. moves to amend Senate File 6 as follows. Page 1, line 25. This is the A52 amendment.
On the amendment, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pogemiller has, explained the rationale and the logic between the different funds, and I agree with this amendment. I don't think does damage, but I do believe it corrects an inconsistency in one item. As I have considered and deliberated on the differences that of the issues that we're and endeavors that we're trying to bring together, the first two funds are focusing on protection of our natural resources, what has been given to us for our protection, that we might protect them and enhance them for enjoyment and appreciation into the future. While the third fund in our cultural legacy is that which we, in fact, have created. And the one item that I think should be moved is the historic sites. We have that with the natural, and actually the historic sites are places where things have occurred as a part of our culture, and I believe it belongs with our cultural legacy. And so what this amendment does is it just lifts historic sites from the Great Outdoors Minnesota Fund and places it in the Cultural Legacy Fund. And I hope that you would consider that a friendly amendment, Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. President, members, I hope that you would vote in favor of this amendment that Senator Olson has presented to us. I think when this bill was drafted, and we've talked about it in committees, we were thinking in many places, the historical sites are located within state parks. Fort Ridgely State Park, it is an example where their historic fort is operated by the Historical Society, but it's within a state park. Also, some history is mentioned in our outdoor recreation plan. But I think Senator Olson has made the stronger argument that it more properly belongs in the cultural legacy part of this bill. So I think it makes sense to adopt this amendment and move the historic sites to the cultural legacy part of the bill.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, this could go either way. Because I think that historic sites are part of great outdoors portion of the statutes. And I'm inclined to defer to Senator Frederickson's and Olson's judgment here, so I'm going to support the amendment.
So further discussion on the A52 amendment. Hearing none, the question occurs on the A52 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The A52 amendment is adopted. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to introduce the A54 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A54 amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate File 6 as follows. Delete everything after the enacting clause and insert. This is the A54 amendment.
On the amendment, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pogemiller and members, the A54 amendment creates a slight change in how we approach this issue. As over the years, I've carefully listened to how this constitutional amendment has kind of morphed into its present form. As we have already discussed, Senator Pariseau kind of brought us back to where the bill originally started with a 1/8% commitment to outdoor habitat and environmental budgets. And as from that early time when Senator Lessard, who was rather a visionary in his own right, tried to bring this to our attention, difficulties occurred on how we go forward. However, the bill that we have before us asks the taxpayers to commit in new funding a percentage of income directly proportional to a 3/8, 1/8, that's what this proposal will be. It commits it in one form of one question to the taxpayers. Will we commit this type of funding not only to the Great Outdoors Minnesota Fund and the Heritage Enhancement Fund, but also to the cultural and artistic resource budgets of our state? This bill changes that slightly. It increases the dollar amount that we are requesting slightly. 3/8, and I have to make an author's amendment to put it in the form. Perhaps we should do that now, Mr. President.
Senator Limmer?
On lines 1, or page 113, and page 2, line 3, change the word 5/16 to 3/8. And there'll be one other addition to that, Mr. President. On page 8, 12, page 8, line 12, change the percentage of 2/16 to 1/8. And also the same reference on line 28, page 8, from 2/16 delete to 1/8. And I'll explain that after it's announced.
The Secretary will report the oral amendment.
Senator Limmer is moving to amend his amendment to Senate File 6 as follows. On page 1 of his amendment, line 13, change or delete 5/16 and insert 3/8. And then on page 2, on line 3, strike 5/16 and insert 3/8. And then on page 8 of the amendment, on line 12, strike 2/16 and insert 1/8. And again on page 8, line 28, strike 2/16 and insert 1/8. Is that correct, Senator?
That's correct.
On the amendment to the amendment, is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Now the A54 amendment as amended. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members, what you see before you is the constitutional amendment, however, and it's been enhanced. It's been enhanced in the arts funding. However, it splits a question to the voter. The voter can ask or can answer the question any way they want. They can vote separately on the fund for the Heritage Enhancement Fund, as well as the Great Outdoor Minnesota Fund, and at the same time have a second question to commit funds for the cultural and artistic targets for this particular bill. In so doing, we do up the ante a little bit on behalf of the artistic commitment, and at the same time, it gives the public an opportunity to vote separately on each committed amount of money. Other than that, the bill remains the same, and we can get this. It certainly does not change the date of when it would be presented before the public as well. I'll stand for any questions.
Is there discussion on the A54 amendment? Senator Polgemiller.
Mr. President, members, I would oppose the amendment. I'd call for roll call.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call vote. Further discussion.
And, Mr. President, I'd oppose it because it would no longer be a stool. It would no longer be a stool that all Minnesotans could sit on. It would be separate legs. And so I would oppose the amendment.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I was trying to figure out how I could counter the stool argument, and I don't think I'm going to do that. But I do want to kind of bring a little bit of a history of evolution of where I've been on this. I am a committed sportsman. I love going out hunting. And at the same time, Senator Pogemiller and his passion of debate in the Tax Committee just a few weeks ago gave me the reason to consider whether we should include the artistic commitment of funds in this bill. However, if I represent a percentage of the public, I know that there's going to be other voters that may just in fact decide to vote against one question because two requirements are in the same question. May cause some confusion, and on the other hand, it may even cause a defeat of the bill. Then in our pursuit of two budgets to be enhanced, we may actually lose both of them. And I really, as a sportsman, I really don't want that to happen. And I believe that the cultural aspect of the bill is important, but nevertheless, I believe that Minnesota citizens not only are smart enough to make this distinction, but they're also willing to make the vote for one or the other or both. And I think we need to recognize that. In this regard, we're not doing anything to take money out of existing sales tax provisions. We're following the lead of the author. It simply splits the question, and it enhances a little bit the funding that would go to the cultural goals of this bill.
Sarah Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I can't help responding to the stool argument. I fell off that stool a long time ago. I think there's a missing leg. Maybe it's got three legs now, but it was balanced for four. When we started talking about budgeting in the Constitution, you lost me. I think you lost a lot of Minnesotans. If we want to put the budget in the Constitution and onto our ballot every other year, then I think maybe Minnesotans could do a better job than we're doing around here. Frankly, I think we lost a lot of people in the argument. You cannot compare this to MVEST and the vote on the ballot from last year, because in that case we were talking about current dollars. We were talking from within. We were talking about dollars that they were currently paying that were not going to transportation. This is an entirely different thing. We're talking about raising taxes in the Constitution and dedicating it and spending it in a certain way. If we do this now, well, next year we might as well do health care. And following budget, we might as well add education to budgeting in the Constitution. I'm sorry, but there's a missing link here.
Senator Worgen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't have a problem with putting the question on the ballot, to be very frank, but I do have a problem with combining too many subjects in the question. I think it muddies the waters, and I think it's unfair to the citizens of Minnesota. That's why this is a good amendment. It does give everyone the opportunity to think carefully about each portion or each subject matter, and I think it's wrong to try and build a consensus by kind of muddying the water and making it unclear and putting in a whole bunch of subjects so that people feel as though they're forced to support one thing and not the other. And maybe they would support both individually. I really don't know. I haven't done all kinds of polling. But I think as a matter of principle, I believe that as a matter of principle, they should be split on the ballot because they are very different topics. And I don't also believe that they rise to the same level. When you talk about our cultural heritage and our great outdoors. We're talking about clean water. We're talking about our lakes and our streams. We're talking about so many different things. And so, members, I'm not asking not to put anything on the ballot. I'm just asking that we put it on the ballot in a fair way by separating the subjects so that Minnesotans have the opportunity to support both, one or the other, or none. Thank you.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. Our state constitution right now currently requires that we use a single subject rule when we pass bills. And so why would we do this any differently for what we will ask the voters to approve? And Senator Limmer has a good idea in dividing this question and making it two separate issues so it doesn't become a super omnibus bill like we so often have seen and have struggled with ourselves. We know that when we package everything together, sometimes we get the things we want and the things we don't want, and it is a struggle for us to decide how to vote for those bills. Here we're going to be doing that same thing to the voters of this state with the current proposal. But Senator Limmer's amendment can help correct that. People can choose one or the other or both. And maybe we would wish that they would choose both, but we shouldn't have to force them to choose both to get one or the other. And so I hope that we will support Senator Limmer's amendment because we should give the people more choice.
Senator Neville.
Mr. President, the way I look at this, there are three different ways to approach this constitutional amendment. Maybe more, but at least three. The first camp says we shouldn't constitutionalize anything because it's our job to set a budget. The second camp says we need a three-legged stool. And the third camp is where I'm at. And it, actually, Senator Roebling probably made a pretty good argument for what I'm going to say, but I have come, as I studied this bill over the years, to the conclusion that we have a fiduciary duty to support our lakes, our clean waters, our habitats, our wetlands. We own them. These are state assets, and when we have another $4 billion deficit, like will come someday again, we would at least be able to maintain a baseline of funding with a constitutional amendment. And so I'm prepared to put that on the ballot. I am not prepared to do that with respect to the arts. The arts funding might be good. I've heard Senator Pogamiller argue he thinks it's just as crucial as clean water. But I don't think it's worthy of being constitutionalized. As much as I support arts funding, and I have always supported arts appropriations, when you have a $4 billion deficit, arts funding is not at the same level of fiduciary duty to maintain, in my view. This amendment will decide whether I vote for the final bill or not. If the questions are separate, I will vote for the final bill and let the people decide whether they think arts funding is of equal priority with the clean water and habitats and wetlands issue. That's the one I support. But I'll vote for the final bill if the people get legitimate opportunities to make that distinction. Without that, then frankly, I think the arts funding is just grabbing the tail of what the most important part of this bill is, and that's the clean water part. And I don't think that's fair. To underscore what Senator Roebling said, that's putting voters in a precarious situation, and it's not fair. And frankly, it may jeopardize the whole bill. You can go on polls, but we haven't had the public campaign on this yet, and I think if you try to create a three-legged stool and one of the legs is opposed, the whole thing might go down. So Senator Limmer's amendment is a good amendment. It's the one that will make a crucial difference, at least for people like me. If this isn't passed, I have made my position clear for a year with the sportsmen's group. I think they're being taken advantage of. The sportsmen have put yeoman's duty into this issue for years, and they're being cheated by having the arts attached to their issue. I will not vote for the final bill, despite my support for the sportsman's piece of it.
if it has the arts funding on it. So members, if you really want to get this on the ballot, Senator Limmer's amendment has to pass, and we've got to give voters a clear opportunity to choose.
Further discussion on the A54 amendment? Seeing none, the question occurs. A roll call has been requested. Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate the arguments on separating the arts away from the outdoors portion. I just want to provide some background and a backdrop to this discussion. For a good 6, 7, 8 years, the proposal to dedicate a part of our sales tax to the outdoors languished in our committee process. And none of us here on the floor had the opportunity to vote for it. The discussion about whether I'm going to vote for it if the arts is in it or not never even came up. We would never even have had this opportunity, to be fair, until the arts portion was put into it. For whatever reason, and I disagree, in fact, my proposals, my Senate file that I authored did not have the arts in it. I think this should be clean. I think it should be reserved to the environment and the outdoors. But the fact of the matter is that none of this dedicated funding discussion ever got the traction, nor did it come to the floor, let alone a conference committee discussion, until we broadened the tent to not just outdoor enthusiasts, but other enthusiasts as well. And be that as it may, we can disagree with it. But I think what Senator Pogemiller said about concentrating on the things we support in this bill and what we are getting as opposed to the things that we don't like is an important one. And to be honest with you, the way this bill is crafted in terms of the arts really leaves the options open for this arts funding to relate to the environment. And if we can think of it in a positive term, those of you who understand the declining enrollment, so to speak, of hunters and anglers in Minnesota, we're going to need every aspect of our society to become more and more interested in the outdoors. And if through the arts community, doing arts projects and cultural shows relating to the environment and hunting and fishing and public radio or historical sites concentrating on our rich outdoor history and culture, we can tap into a segment of Minnesota's communities that are not currently engaged in the outdoors. This is a possibility, and it's a very positive way that we could look on this. Again, my preference is have it just relate to the outdoors. But to be fair, we never even got this far. We never even got the luxury to vote yes or no on dedicated funding until the arts is in there. So let's not be too hard on that proposal.
Further discussion on the A54 amendment. The question occurs on the A54 amendment. The secretary will take the roll on the A54 amendment. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The secretary will close the roll. There being 19 ayes and 45 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A-56 amendment.
Secretary will report the A-56 amendment.
That state's thing. Mr. President, the
Secretary will report the A-56 amendment.
Senator Dibble moves to amend Senate File 6 as follows, page 1, line 24. This is the A-56 amendment.
On the amendment, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I don't believe the authors oppose this. This is just a technical amendment. It strikes the words, the states, and inserts the words in Minnesota on the first page down on those bottom two lines, and it does the same on the bottom of page 3 and the top of page 4, and that's just to make sure that the intent is clear, that we're not literally talking about state parks, that there may be some ability for these funds, if they're made available, for other kinds of parks, like the metropolitan regional parks that act as the state parks in the metro area. It's probably not necessary, but it just goes to intent. It's kind of a picky technical amendment.
Is there discussion on the A-56 amendment? Seeing none, the question occurs on the A-56 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion, Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A-35.
Secretary will report the A-35 amendment.
Senator Chaudhry moves to amend Senate File 6 as follows, page 1, line 21. This is the A-35 amendment.
On the amendment, Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have spoken with the author about this amendment. The bill refers to the Dallas Sams Legacy Act, and I think I feel that that's appropriate. But I do feel that it's appropriate to name one more person within the bill. Senator Bob Lessard is the originator of this proposal and worked on it night and day until his retirement from the Senate. I think that as a leader of the sportsman community in the Senate and since leaving the Senate, Senator Lessard deserves a type of recognition within this bill. And so I'm simply proposing that where we say Heritage Enhancement Fund, that we insert the Lessard Heritage Enhancement Fund. And this fund only relates to the game, fish, wildlife habitat that he worked on so hard. And I see Senator Lessard sitting in the gallery today, watching over us as we consider this proposal. And it's not my intent to shed light on him and put the spotlight on him, because I don't think that he would wish that upon himself. And I don't think that he would actually wish for us to ever name this legacy after him. But I think it's undisputable that it is his legacy. And I would ask the members to recognize this legacy and at least call the fund by which we are enhancing our outdoor and hunting and fishing community after Senator Lessard.
Let me remind the members that the Senate rules say that a member may not introduce a visitor or visitors in the galleries from the floor of the rostrum of the Senate.
Mr. President.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President, Senator Chaudhry, I hope this is a friendly amendment, but I think everywhere where you have Lessard, it would be appropriate to insert Bob before Lessard. I have his first name and his last name. So I think that's a friendly amendment, but if can you just incorporate it, Mr. President?
There are numerous other amendments at the desk, and this would, I think, take a couple of things to do to get us there, Senator Tomasoni.
Is this difficult, Mr. President, or no?
How about the middle initial?
It would be easier, frankly, if the amendment were withdrawn, and I think this could be done redone rather quickly, and then we could look at other amendments. There's a number waiting at the desk, but I think to try to go through this and do this orally is going to create some confusion here.
Trapper.
Well, that's up to you. Are you going to withdraw it or are you going to leave it the way it is?
Stand up, make that amendment. Trapper.
Okay, I'll withdraw that for now, Mr. President.
So further discussion on the A-35 amendment. Hearing none, the question occurs on the A-35 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The chair is in doubt. Motion does not prevail. Division has been requested. Those in favor, please rise. Please be seated. There are more than 34 votes. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion? Senator Roebling?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the 828 amendment.
Secretary will report the 828 amendment.
Senator Roebling moves to amend Senate File 6 as follows, page 1, line 25. This is the A-28 amendment.
On the amendment, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, we already had some discussion about the section involving arts funding. And what this amendment proposes to do is to reduce the amount for the arts funding and take the remainder of the 24%, $70 million a year for the arts, can't be supplanted by current base funding, which is already $14 million a year. So we're looking at about $84 million a year for arts funding that would absolutely be there always, no matter what, under the current language. And as Senator Neville pointed out, arts are a good thing. But when tough times come, when emergencies arise, they're not always the things that rise to the priority level that we sometimes have to have things at. I know in 1993, the arts funding did get cut when we really were looking for money to fund education and for health care. And it's back up. It's come back up to where we were, I believe. But I'm wanting to do this. The 10% would still be dedicated to the arts. 14% would be divided according to law set by the legislature into the funds created in this section. And this is just to allow us a little more flexibility. And I'm thinking, what if a major groundwater contamination was discovered, and we needed a lot of money to address that very quickly? What if unique property comes up for sale that's going to go for some other purpose if the DNR can't buy it quite soon? And we all know that this is property that we want to get. What if a disease sweeps through the waterfowl population or the deer population or the fish population? Or there's another invasive species that has to be stopped, and it's going to take a lot of money right away. And we don't have money in our general fund maybe to do that, but if we had more discretionary money provided by this proposal, we could get at it very quickly. Another one that Senator Bach has been trying to address and we hope we can avoid is the ash borer. But what if? What if that becomes a big crisis in Minnesota? What if we had the funds from something like this to more readily and easily by law move some of that money around? I think that's what people want. I think they want us first and foremost to take care of our environment, to take care of our water. And it doesn't preclude 14% going on top of that 10% for the arts for a major art project, if that's the priority of the legislature some year. But it also allows that money to go wherever our priorities are at the time. I think that we need the flexibility, and I just really want you to think about this, because the current language says that money cannot be supplanted from the base. So right now, looking at it as this, the arts would get about $84 million a year. And I'm just saying that that seems really rich. And we should have some more money within this proposal to move around from one crisis, one priority to another. And I'm hoping you'll give it your consideration. I stand for questions.
Senator Polgemiller.
Mr. President, I'd like to call for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call vote. Further discussion.
Mr. President, just very briefly, I obviously oppose this proposal, this amendment. It is a three-legged stool, and it's not about flexibility in funding for the budget year. This is about creating legacies in three distinct areas in our state. And Senator Roebling, if those items that you suggest happen, I'm sure the legislature will react. But this is new money. This is money that we're asking the voters to vote for. And it's a three-legged stool, and I would be concerned that the stool would fall over if you shorten this leg any further.
So further discussion on the A28 amendment. Senator Senchum.
Mr. President, I want to stand in support of Senator Roebling's amendment. If I understand it, and I would suggest that over the next century, and this is constitutional. This is forever, basically, until we change it. So, over the next century, I guess it's what, 25 years, okay. But let's just say over the course of those 25 years, we do find ourselves at in a recession. $4.5 million, our most recent one. I think this gives the legislature a chance to be flexible. We all know Senator Berglund has a lot of needs from time to time, and especially a lot of needs when we're facing those kind of crises. And this would give, I think, the legislature an opportunity to be flexible. Most of the time, the vast majority of the next 25 years, I think this amendment's probably going to sail along just as written. But there might be that occasional time, and I think that's what Senator Roebling's suggesting, that we do need to have a little flexibility, and I think this is a wise amendment, and I would urge its support.
Further discussion on the H-28,
Mr. President.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. President, members, I know Senator Roebling has put a great deal of work in this amendment, but I prefer what we have in the bill now. Senator Roebling talked about flexibility and greater flexibility, but the portion of the bill that's going to the arts now is the 24%. That is the smallest percentage of the three legs of that three-legged stool. And of that 24%, 43% is going to the Minnesota Arts Board for grants. And there's a great deal of flexibility within the other 57%, although it must be spent on art education and access to arts. And now with Senator Olson's amendment for historic sites, I think all of us received information from the Minnesota Council for the Minnesota Citizens for the Arts this fall. Session that outlined in each of our districts the amount of money that's spent on arts, the number of people in Minnesota that participate in arts across the state, And it's really very significant. We do have a rich legacy of supporting the arts in Minnesota, and also of our citizens really valuing the arts. They also provided each of us with some information on the arts organizations within the state. Of the 1,584 arts and cultural organizations in the state, they generated for governments $94 million of taxes, provided 22,000 full-time jobs, and participants and audiences involved was 14.5 million people. Minnesotans value the arts. I think we need to provide a base of supports for our art legacy.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. President, members, I probably will not be voting for this bill because I don't think it's appropriate to budget, set the state budget with constitutional amendments. But I presume it's probably going to pass anyway. And if it's going to pass, the Roebling Amendment makes it a little bit better because it gives the legislature a little flexibility to use some of these dollars for some other emergencies or other things that may come up as we move into the future. And for those of us that are not going to be voting for this bill, I think most of us object to budgeting by way of the state constitution, and if that's your reason for voting against it, and for those that are going to be supporting it, I think I'd really strongly encourage you to vote for the Roebling Amendment because it gives us more flexibility going into the future.
Sir Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. My first role as a public servant was on the Metropolitan Regional Arts Council. The arts are very important to me. They're very important to my children. They're a key part of my life and always have been. And I think it's a great effort here to try and piece together a political solution, but at what cost? If it was $14 million in our annual budget now, we're going to increase it to $84 million. For arts, $70 million for arts. It's a huge increase. And we're going to say that we have to spend that money every single year, in good times or in bad times. Can that possibly be our highest priority, that we would put it in the Constitution? If that's the case, if we're looking for people's highest priorities in order to put together the political deal to seal the deal on this bill, then put me in for 20% at nursing home funding. We need to rebuild our nursing homes across the state of Minnesota. If you want to talk about culture and heritage, then please, let's talk about our senior citizens who are living in these nursing homes. We need statewide money to pay for the construction and rehabilitation of our nursing homes. If you're looking for the deal for 67 senators to support it, add some money for me for the nursing homes. I love the arts. They're important, but they cannot be our highest priority when times are tough in the state of Minnesota.
Sarah Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to remind members that we are not necessarily taking the money away from the arts. We're promising 10% to the arts and saying that 14% is available for any of the other three funds in this bill. And if indeed the arts are a high priority for the legislature, that amount could easily be 24%. But if some years there are other priorities that need to be addressed, and maybe we don't have the general fund money because we need to use the general fund money for health care and education and such things like that, and we need to have money to address a crisis in the environment or in wildlife habitat, then we have the money available. It just provides us with a little extra flexibility.
Further discussion on the A28 amendment. Hearing none, roll call has been requested. The question occurs on the A28 amendment. The secretary will take the roll. All senators voted who desire to vote. The secretary will close the roll. There being 22 ayes and 43 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendments are not adopted. For further discussion on Senate File 6. Senator Marty, Senator Neville.
Mr. President, I just want to make one extra argument beyond what I said before. This bill doesn't define the term arts. And it's true that the statutory portion of this bill allocates it between arts grants and arts education and access. But that's all subject to change. It could go to public television and public radio to foster arts access or arts programming. You know, that was a controversial piece last year. Why are we constitutionalizing arts public television and public radio? Well, I'm telling you, the way this bill is crafted, it's going to get there anyway, statutorily, because the term arts is not defined in this bill. It's so big that we can give it to lots of different things, including public television and public radio, for all the things that they do under that could loosely be defined as arts funding. And this is the last thing I'm going to say. I'm sorry to the sportsmen, because I don't think the way this bill is crafted will help it getting passed, and I think you've been dealt an injustice.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, I have the A34 amendment.
Secretary will report the A34 amendment.
Senator Marty moves to amend set of file 6 as follows. Page 1. This is the A34 amendment.
On the amendment, Senator Marty.
Mr. President, members, this is an amendment that was adopted in the Tax Committee. It didn't last too long, but it was in there, and I think it was a good amendment. This would change the bill. It doesn't change any of the funding or any of the ways the funding is distributed, but simply would make it a statutorily dedicated fund instead of a constitutionally dedicated fund. And I'd like to make a couple of arguments on that point. I think when I talk to people in private, about 95% of us think it's a lousy idea, bad public policy to put budget items in the Constitution. And there's a reason we think it's a bad way to do it. I think this amendment may have started about 10 years ago. There was no clean water legacy in there. We weren't talking about clean water legacy. Forest legacy, we weren't talking about forest legacy. Now we see the danger of the fragmentation of our forests. Now we see how we've got to do something about our waters. If we had passed this 10 years ago, we would have locked in constitutionally funding for certain purposes. And realistically, I think most of us recognize that other general fund sources to go for environment and natural resources would not have stayed the same because of it. So we wouldn't be addressing those needs. And now we're trying to predict 25 years from now what we're going to be needing. Even in these areas, we don't have a clue of what it is. Yesterday, I heard one of the members of our caucus talk about, you know, maybe there's a little bit too much in the arts and too little in the waters. I've heard people here on the floor offer amendments to change it around. A little bit more here, a little less there. Let's face it, there are six people in a conference committee next week are going to determine what we're going to lock in the Constitution for 25 years. Six people. I hope their judgment is good. But that's what we will do if we lock it in the Constitution for 25 years. Constitutionally, we're going to lock in a tax that Senator Pogomiller says, well, it's not as regressive as it used to be. We're going to lock in the Constitution a tax that's regressive when we say we care about the fact that a lot of middle and lower income people are paying an unfair share, they can't afford it. Well, we're going to lock in another regressive tax because, well, that's a little more acceptable politically these days. But that's 25 years. If we make it statutorily dedicated, we have the chance to make it a fairer tax at some point. We can change things around. And you know, I don't think there are more than a handful of people in this body who would support more funding for natural resources than I would. I mean that. I'm willing to pay the taxes for it, willing to vote for tax increases to pay for it. But is this shortchanged vis-a-vis other items in the budget? Maybe so. But Senator Higgins' bill last week, the one that almost was vetoed but wasn't vetoed, provided a decent increase for domestic violence programs. Still not close to where those programs were 6 years ago or so. It's not that we don't need it. In 2003, the Korean Coalition for Battered Women, at least 14 Minnesota women died from domestic violence, 10 children. 2004, it was 13 more women, 11 more children. 2005, at least 26 women and 4 children. 2006, at least 20 women and 4 children. Why do I say that? That's just one small item in the budget. We can't afford, we're sending these women back to a place where some of them, 20 last year, got murdered. Because we don't have enough shelter space for them and we can't fund it. So yes, we're underfunding natural resources. Yes, we need to do it long term. But who are the ones who put together the budgets? And I realize the budgets are constrained a lot by who the governor is. 2003, when he took 2 cents that was dedicated since the 1960s to cigarette tax money, took it out of the Future Resources Fund, put it in the general fund, not to fix the budget. Yeah, it was to fix the budget then, but he had to fix it that way permanently. And where was the outcry from environmentalists, from sportsmen? They were the ones who knew what they were talking about, so that was outrageous. But if we take the people, the massive force behind this bill, the only reason it's going somewhere is because they've got some political clout. If they'd use it to work the political process, they could pressure the governor to actually support funding for this. He's going to be at the fishing opener tomorrow. He's showing his support, but he could put it in the budget. If we couldn't change him, the political clout of these good groups could be used to make sure we have the votes to override it. But instead of that, we're not going to work to change the politics of it here. We can go up for the photo ops at the fishing opener, show how much care about the environment and our natural resources. And in process of it, we'll be locking in funds. I think Senator Anderson and others are arguing, appropriately so, that this isn't providing enough money to clean up the waters. We're not actually sure how much it is. I haven't been tracking it as much this year because committee changes, but I remember in the past few years, the group that put together the Clean Water Legacy, how much do we need? The ranges were between about $80 million and $250 million a year. We don't know, but we're going to lock in this amount, probably not even the $100 million that most people guess it needs. Do we really think if we pass this that we're going to be putting in more money to waters? 25 years we're putting this in the Constitution. That's why I think most of us in this room realize this is bad public policy. We have an obligation not just to our popularity of current proposals, but we've got to be concerned about these issues in the long term, and that's why I wish we'd reject the bill as a whole, but if we're going to do it, let's at least dedicate it statutorily so we can get rid of the unfair taxes at some point, so we can adjust it. If we need more money for waters, we can adjust that. It should be hard to change because the advocates are right. We need to dedicate long-term commitment to this. But that's why we ought to put pressure on. If the governor wants to take money from natural resources and put it in the general fund, we ought to be speaking out against it, and the public ought to be outraged at it. I urge you to support this amendment. It's a simple amendment. It does dedicate the funding. It sets aside the same percentage of the sales tax, new money, and it dedicates it to these same percentages that that Senator Pogamiller and this legislation does now. And then again, if the conference committee decides that maybe we're going to change these percentages a little bit or put a little more here, a little less there, that it's not going to be locked in a way we can't change it if we find out we have greater needs for waters or for forests or for habitat or for whatever. We can change it because it's dedicated, but yes, we have a little bit of flexibility. So I urge your support for the A34 amendment.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I'd like to request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call vote. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I obviously oppose the amendment. This does get to the question of whether you actually want to, in my judgment, the only way to accomplish this kind of level of funding for these things is to go this route. I think it's pretty apparent to members of the Senate that a statutory approach will simply not get us where we need to go.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. President, I too would like to urge a no vote on this amendment. Now, in theory and in pure budgeting, I think Senator Marty makes some sense with this, but we don't deal in the idealistic. We deal in the real world, and I don't think the reality is that we would raise 0.375 of a sales tax by our action and the House action and the governor signing it. I just don't see that happening. I think it makes sense to take that question to all the people of Minnesota, which I think most of us are willing to do, at least many of us are willing to do, and make the argument that for these three legacy issues, it makes a lot of sense to increase the tax on ourselves, ask the citizens of Minnesota to increase the tax on themselves for these three legacy items and place that constitutionally in the Constitution. We have an example, a fairly recent example, of statutory dedication versus constitutional dedication. When the lottery was formed, and we knew we were going to have that money coming into the state treasury, Governor Perpich suggested, and the legislature agreed, that we were going to spend half of it on the environment and half for rural economic development. As a result of that, we ended up constitutionally dedicating 40% of our lottery proceeds to the environment and natural resources. That's the money we spend from the LCCMR. The other 50% was statutorily earmarked for rural development, and it was put under the control of a citizen board. The citizen board didn't operate very well. The director of the Greater Minnesota Corporation within a couple years was in a great deal of controversy, and as a result of that, we still have 40% of the lottery proceeds going to the environment, but members, the half that was statutorily dedicated for rural economic development is gone. That's just gone into the general fund of the state and has pretty much disappeared. Now, it goes to certainly worthwhile state programs like education, like health and human services, like all the other vital things we do, but it initially was earmarked for rural economic development, and it no longer goes for that purpose because it wasn't put in the Constitution. It was merely appropriated by law.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. President. And as I've listened to this discussion about Senator Marty's amendment, which I do support, it's apparent that the highest priority that we have this year is Senate File 6, arts and clean water. This is the bill that is so important to fund that we're going to do it constitutionally because it's the only way to get around the governor's veto. We sent Senators Berglund bills out, funding for our nursing homes, statutorily. It's a high priority, folks. It got vetoed. We sent Senator Pappas's higher ed bill out to lower tuition for our students. Statutorily, that got vetoed. Where are our priorities? I urge you support Senator Marty and his effort to let the legislature do what we should do, set the priorities for the state, and do it statutorily.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would direct members to the Minnesota Constitution, Article 10, Section 1, Power of Taxation. Taxes shall be uniform, shall be levied, but public burying grounds, schoolhouses, hospitals, academies, colleges, universities, all seminaries, churches, church property, houses of worship, institutions of public charity, household goods, farm machinery, and others are explained in great detail in our Minnesota Constitution on how we should handle those budgetary items. Article 10 continues on that talks about the occupation tax related to mining ores. It talks about, includes provisions for the motor fuel taxation, the gas tax, in our Constitution. We also budget also for aircraft, that the legislature may tax aircraft. In Section 6, taconite taxation. In Section 8 of Article 10, paramutual betting. Moving on to Article 11. Public debt and works of internal improvement, talking about operating of airports, agricultural resources, railroad rights of way, maintenance of highways, forestation, abating forest fires, all in our Constitution. Moving on to the permanent school fund, the investment, and the Board of Investment. Article 11, Section 9, the Permanent University Fund, talking about how we can loan bonds to the county or the school district. Section 11, timberlands set apart as state forests and the disposition of our revenue. Section 12, county, township, or municipal aid to railroads being limited. Article 13, the safekeeping of state funds, embezzlement, and of course Section 14, which Senator Fredrickson referred to, the Environment and Natural Resources Fund relating to the lottery. So, Mr. President and members, we do a lot of budgeting in Minnesota's Constitution, a lot. And I might venture to say that we don't do this type of budgeting because it's the most important thing that we value. I would submit it to the members that we budget in the Constitution because there's a history of these items being the least important to the members, given history, given time. Over the many, many years, I think there probably was an inattention to the needs of northeastern Minnesota and the Iron Range. And so that spurred the importance of putting a taconite tax in our Constitution. There was a inattention to the use of our timber forests, and so we put that in our Constitution. See, members, the law, in my opinion, is not a function of logic. It's a function of our history. And the history, as with any constitution, has been that a large part of our constitutions are reserved for protecting a minority, protecting those that have not seen the attention or the prevalence that they have had in our country's history. We start with civil rights. We start with the rights of minorities to vote are just one example. And now we consider here the long legacy of Minnesota's budgeting and its inattention to the environment. And by the way, our culture and our historical legacy. That's why we need this constitutional amendment. This idea was first put forward 10 years ago. 10 years ago, the proposal was put forth to say, hey, let's constitute a part of our sales tax to the environment because things are going downhill. And a lot of people said the same thing 10 years ago. No, we need to be responsible enough. We need to be responsible enough to budget legislatively for these important needs. And now, 10 years later, the environment still remains only 1% of our general fund budget, even after the discussion over a decade of devoting our sales tax to the environment, we still haven't acted to increase the funding legislatively. I think that's proof positive, members, that we need to do this. And so I think we need to correct the impression that we're doing this because it's the most important thing to us, and that there are more important things like nursing homes and other things. No, we're doing this because this is the least important to us. Human services is 40% of Minnesota's general fund budget. What's the number?
26%.
Okay. I stand corrected. 26% of our general fund budget. And the environment remains one. The education budget remains... The education budget is the 40% of our general fund budget. I had those backwards. I'm sorry. And the environment remains one. So these things are important to us as well they should be. As well they should be. Education, health care, property taxes, transportation, veterans, nursing homes. But when all the budgeting is set and done and all the dust is settled over the next week, where is the environment going to be? It's going to be at the bottom of the barrel. And so here we have an opportunity to let the voters decide if this is important enough for us to consider. And so that's why we need to put this in the Constitution. Not because it's the most important to us, because it has historically been the least.
Sarah Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. It kind of looks like a tempting, attractive compromise, but it is not that. What this is a straightforward tax increase, 0.375% of our sales tax across the state of Minnesota to go into a legislative slush fund. Let me explain. No voter input at all. We're just going to raise the sales tax, very regressive. The poorest of the poor will pay for these sales taxes. It will hit our state very hard. And then when we get the money, we don't have to dedicate it for anything. Next year, we can come in and change the percentages. In fact, it will be a real great point of contention every budget year as to how we're going to distribute these monies across the board. And maybe they'll be for these services, and maybe they won't be for these purposes. But the next legislature will get to decide that. It won't be us, and it won't be the voters that put us here. It will be the next group of politicians that come forward and have interesting uses for the legislative slush fund. So let's be really clear. We can dedicate it, but it means absolutely nothing. Council will tell you that the next legislature can change it. So let's not vote for a legislative slush fund of 0.375% increase in the taxes to raise, I think it's $295 million a year for whatever we think the purpose should be. And let me just say how interesting it is, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. President. Just an observation that just two short days ago, 48 hours, the chief author of this bill kind of liked this amendment. I'm wondering what happened between Wednesday morning in the tax committee and today. It was great on Wednesday. Maybe that was just to get it through the process and into the rules committee, but I'm wondering maybe the majority leader and the chief author of this bill might yield and explain why this bill is better without this amendment today when he kind of liked it on Wednesday.
Is there further discussion on the A34 amendment? Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, Senator Marty made a very good point that I think is worth reinforcing. You know, it wasn't many years ago nobody talked about funding for clean water and for forest fragmentation. I mean, let me take that a step further. You know, it wasn't many years ago nobody talked about funding for early childhood. And we didn't have any idea how important early childhood funding was. Members of this body just a few years ago had no understanding about
how important and how rapidly the brain expands in the first 3 years of life. We didn't have that information, but we do now. I've seen some wonderful studies done by the University of Minnesota about how the brain does develop in those first 3 years, and I think most of us agree now that it's an area of the budget that we should put some money into. But members, I don't know what new information is going to come to us 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, where we are going to learn things that we don't know today. And we are elected by people that expect us to come here and make decisions that represent the public's priorities. And we don't know what those priorities are going to be. They might be in public safety. I can tell you today what the priorities are in Cook County, in my district. It's fire suppression. It is the number one thing on everybody's mind on the north shore of Lake Superior today. We didn't know that a week ago. But the county board called me yesterday, and they're starting to put their thoughts together about what kind of a bonding request they might be able to make to Senator Langseth to deal with the next fire so that they're more prepared. Because we didn't clearly understand how this might rise to be the priority that it is today. We just can't know what the future priorities are. That's why giving future legislatures the flexibility to respond to the public's priorities is important, because we just don't know. And it's not good policy to bind the hands of future legislatures so that they can't respond to the people's priorities. You know, members, this vote on Senator Marty's amendment is going to be one of the most courageous votes you take this session. I don't believe there is anything courageous about letting the people decide. You've got an election certificate and an obligation to come here and reflect the people's priorities. And to simply dodge that relationship and say, I'm going to turn it back to the people, that's not leadership. And I think what people are hungry for in government today is leadership. And we have a lack of it in government all over this country. And that, I think, is part of the reason people are becoming very cynical about government. Is before we make decisions, oftentimes we put our finger to the wind and check which way the political wind is blowing before we cast our vote. Senator Marty has an amendment, Senator Marty, that's probably not going to pass because it's courageous. It is saying that these things are important, and they're so important, I'm going to raise your taxes to pay for them. That is courageous. If they're that important, then let's stand up and put the money up. And I think they're important. And I think the public thinks they're important. And Senator Marty is right. And Senator Chaudhry and Senator Pogemiller are right. We haven't put enough money into these areas of the budget. So today, let's put some money in. Take the vote that puts real money in for clean water and the other things that are in this bill. A vote to support Senator Marty's amendment actually says you've got the courage to put the money in. That's what it does. And you know what, members? That kind of courage and that kind of leadership is hard work. It's hard work. And that's why it's not going to pass. Because most of us aren't willing to do the heavy lifting it takes to fund these areas. Because it comes with some political risk. Because at home, you'll have to be able to explain it. And you know what? That's hard to do. Because people often hear things by soundbite, and it's hard to get your message out why you were right. And when you think you may not be able to get your message out, guess what? You might lose the next election. So it comes with some risk. But leadership always comes with risk. Real leaders always take chances. That's what leadership is about. Senator Marty's amendment goes on. Anybody can vote for this bill. Light it up green. 66 votes. Senator Stump's not here. It's an easy vote. You're not voting to fix anything. You're not voting that this is a priority. Turn it over to the people. That's easy. Senator Marty's got the courageous vote, members. The one that puts real money into these programs. The other thing is, this isn't just poor policy. It's terrible policy. Terrible policy that the only way we have the courage to raise taxes for things that are important is we have to let the voters decide. That's the only way we can do it. Members, it's a sad, sad time in government when that's the only way we're willing to fund things we think that's important. And I encourage you to support the Marty Amendment. Show the leadership that the people in this state want you to show. That if these things are important, then put real money into them. Real money. Kind of reminds me of a tug of war. You know, you can never win the tug of war if somebody's pushing on the rope. Everybody has to be pulling on the rope. And that's hard work. And Senator Marty's amendment is hard work. It's heavy lifting. Because you'll take some criticism for it. But I think people at home will respect you. And they will respect somebody that stands up and provides some leadership. Because I think people are hungry for it. Not only in Minnesota, but all over the country. So members, I very respectfully request that you do what the Tax Committee did. The Tax Committee already took this vote. We put this amendment on the bill. That was a courageous vote for you members of the Tax Committee. Tax Committee thought this stuff was important. And members of the Tax Committee have heard me say many times, that's where the real tough votes get taken in committee in this legislature. And this is a tough vote today. This is the kind of vote that members of the Tax Committee take frequently. So members, I very respectfully request that you do the right thing. If these things are important, vote to put real money into them. And vote for Senator Marty's amendment.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I rise to support the Senator Marty amendment for many of the reasons that Senator Bach had talked about. First, I just want to mention that back several years ago, and Senator Bach, you're right, every year it seems that there's another disaster to take care of. I mean, we had the one up in Senator Langseth's district this year with the bonding bill. We've had tornadoes in St. Peter, one, I think, over by Limmer's district. Every year there's a little something different. We have to come in and readjust our budgets. I was up there the last time the Boundary Waters had a fire. It was called the SAG fire. And let me tell you, those folks work long hours with very few resources trying to put out fires with chainsaws and shovels. Every now and again, they'll get a helicopter or a plane full of water to give them a little bit of help, but it's mainly manual labor. It's tough business. We need to provide those people with more resources so that we can save the resources that we're talking about in this bill. Now, I agree with Senator Chaudhry and Senator Pogue-Miller that to protect our water resources is probably in the top five issues of things that we can do for the long-term longevity and health of our state. But folks, to abdicate our responsibility as legislators to make these decisions ourselves, I think is a tragedy. I didn't much care for putting the invest amendment in front of the people, even though I had a pretty good idea that it was going to pass. As a chairman of the Transportation Committee, one of the few things that are statutorily, or I should say embedded into the Constitution, that we provide our constituents in the state of Minnesota, I didn't feel it was appropriate to put it into the Constitution. But that's what happened. Folks, we could have done that on our own. We just didn't have the political courage. What I would ask folks is to listen to the words that Senator Marty talked about when he talked about battered women's shelter, the increase in crime directed at women in this state is appalling. I think that's more important than putting this in the Constitution. When Senator Berglund talks about the hundreds and thousands of people who are uninsured or underinsured, I think that's more important than putting this provision in the Constitution. And when Senator Vickerman talks about ag and veterans issue, I know darn well that that's more important. That is more important, folks. Not that water resources are not, but our veterans are coming back today, sightless, armless, limbless. And the federal government has cut, once again, funding for veterans. Folks, our state is going to be in perilous shape in a few years when this war in Iraq and Afghanistan gets cleaned up. And all those veterans are going to need services, and their families are going to need services. The suicide rate is unbelievable. These families are left here without their primary breadwinners. A majority of the families with their primary breadwinners are overseas. These families are struggling, and they're falling apart. And Senator Vickerman, you and your committee have done a wonderful job, and so has the governor, at trying to address those issues. And I think those issues and making sure that veterans can come home from this war and be able to walk back onto their job site and perform the functions that they did before is paramount to anything else that we do. Now, folks, please vote for the Marty Amendment. Very few things, I think, rise to the level of putting them in the Constitution. And even though I'm kind of downstream from everyone else because I represent the area that has Lake Pepin in it, and Senator Chaudhry has been a champion for those water resources, but even though I live downstream, I think of the streams of the people who have built this great state and this great nation, the streams of blood that they poured out to make sure that we can live in a land that's free, that we can live in a land where we can go get a hunting license and go out and hunt or fish. These are the people that we should be trying to take care of, folks. You know, there's a lot of years, and both of my kids still do. They go out and they hunt and fish almost every day when it's in season, when it's legal. And there's not a day that goes by that I wish I still wasn't able to go do that. But I'm not. But I would hope that as the years pass, we continue to keep an eye on the pheasants and waterfowl and trout that have made this state a place where people can come and enjoy recreational sports. And I would hope that people would look towards Minnesota in the future and know that we are a state that is committed to making sure that our waters and air are as pure as reasonably possible. But we don't need to put it in the Constitution. It doesn't rise to the people who I know personally who are back from Iraq now And I just want to tell you about my good friend. I'm not going to mention his name because he would probably not like it if I did here. But he's a good friend. He lives down in Kenyon. The convoy that he was on got hit by an IED. A couple members of our National Guard died that day. This man showed unbelievable bravery as he charged into what I call bands of hot lead to reach those individuals who had lost their life and were severely injured. He by himself, well, I shouldn't say by himself, he led a movement of three or four brave soldiers, men and women, to change the tires on that vehicle and get it out of the way so that the rest of the convoy could move forward. In the process, because we all know that if you're sitting still and you're getting shot at, you're a pretty easy target. Well, this man and his men and women charged ahead and got the job done and got that convoy moving, but not without injury, not without loss of life. And he comes home, and his shoulder is not in good shape. And this is a man that is healthy, a former Marine, and also a state employee at one of our correctional facilities. He's not going to be able to return to that work, because when you're dealing with the worst and violent offenders, you better be in good shape. This man can't lift his elbow up past his shoulder. He can't even get it up 45 degrees. He'll never be the same. He won't return to that job. Let's take care of the folks like that. Let's take care of the folks like that.
Senator Polgemiller.
Mr. President, members, it's going to be a rare moment when I stand and disagree with the chair of the Tax Committee, chair of the Transportation Committee, chair of Division of Taxes, and the chair of the Environment Committee. But there's different kinds of courage and wisdom. As a parent, you learn that sometimes you need to set aside perfection and strong beliefs to get the job done. This is a moment where, in my humble opinion, we need to set aside the reasons to be against this so that we can grasp the opportunity to be for it and get something done for the future of Minnesota.
Further discussion on the A34 amendment. Seeing none, the question occurs on the A34 amendment. The Secretary will take the roll. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The Secretary will close the roll. There being 28 ayes and 38 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 6. Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much. Is it President? President, thank you, Mr. President. I just want to make a couple of comments about the bill. I am not offering an amendment today, and I'm speaking in support of the bill.
I I'm told that there are no other amendments. Maybe we could do third reading and then take comments. Are there any other amendments? The Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 6, a bill for an act relating to natural and cultural resources, proposing an amendment to the Minnesota Constitution, Article 11, etc.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I just want to speak in support of Senate File 6. And, you know, I haven't said anything during this whole debate, so I want to comment on a couple of the issues that have been raised during the debate. And first of all, I think we've had a very vigorous discussion about why the Constitution and why these issues in the Constitution. And I've been skeptical and reluctant, but I've come a long ways during the last 10 years of discussion on this issue to be a strong, firm supporter of constitutional dedication, and I just want to say why. You know, all of us who come here who are elected have a lot of priorities for the people that we represent. Education, health care, housing, protecting victims of violence, as Senator Marty said, those are all critically important, and we all have important work to do on those. And many of us have been frustrated that we haven't had adequate funding in those areas in recent years. But I think that there's a reason why we need specifically to protect our natural resources and our clean water, in particular, in the Constitution. The reason for that is that our lakes and our rivers and our streams and our prairies and forests and natural areas and wildlands that are out there, if we don't protect them now, if we don't do this in the next 25 years, we won't get another chance. These resources are precious and they are limited. They are not renewable resources. And they are not just precious because they're unique and they could be used up, but because they are so much a part of what makes Minnesota, Minnesota. Part of what makes our life here so unique and special. And so we only have one chance to save those natural resources. And I think we've all heard over and over the risk that our water is facing and that our lands are facing. And if we don't act now to preserve them, they won't be here in the shape that we recognize and need for our children and grandchildren. I also support the inclusion of the arts in this constitutional amendment. And I think if you put those together, if you put the arts together and the cultural legacy together with our environmental legacy, you're talking about the issues that, for the most part, are not the necessities of life, but they're the things that make life worth living. And I agree with Senator Chaudhry that these are the things that end up on the chopping block over and over and over again here at the legislature, that they're the expendable pieces of the budget. And so that's another reason why I support the idea of constitutional dedication. But I think we need to do a little bit better job in this bill in focusing on the essential parts. And of all the parts of this bill, the one piece that is essential to our life and to the lives of all the living things is the water and protecting that water and keeping it clean. And I don't think we're quite doing the job on clean water in this bill. And I think we all know that when the voters go to the ballot box and vote on this issue, it's the protection of clean water that is going to drive the strongest public support for this amendment. And that's the priority, I believe, of the people that we represent all across this state. And I think we need to do a little bit of work to make that priority stronger in this amendment. We've talked a lot about clean water this session. It's been a huge priority for our committee as well as for the policy committee. We know that of all the lakes and waters that have been tested, at least 40% of them are impaired, and we've only begun to do the job of testing them. We know that under the governor's budget proposal, the testing and the TMDL plan process and the cleanup process will only get our waters cleaned up in 150 years. That was the testimony that we arrived at in our committee under the dollars in the governor's budget. In our budget that we passed as a legislature, I think we did better, but not good enough. We put in quite a bit more money, but it's only for 1 year. So the way I look at it, under the governor's budget, we'd clean up all of our water, perhaps during our grandchildren's lifetime. And under the budget that the legislature passed, which made clean water a little bit higher priority, maybe we'd clean it up in our children's lifetime. But members, let's do it in our lifetime. We deserve it. Let's do it in the next decade or two. Let's do it in the next foreseeable part of our political careers. Let's put that legacy in place now so that we can live to see it. And we have to do it. That urgency is here when it comes to our water. The other piece that I'm concerned about is that, Senator Pogemiller, I've heard you talk a lot about the three-legged stool, and three-legged stools are great. They're very stable. That's an easy concept to understand. But I don't think that putting the parks and the water into the same pot of money helps either one of them. And frankly, most chairs have four legs, and they stand up just fine. So I think that what we're doing is a disservice to both the parks and the water by putting them in one pot without enough money for either one, if you combine them into that one pot of money. And I know as an urban legislator that my constituents, while lots and lots of them are fortunate enough to spend time going to state parks and hunting and fishing and hiking and canoeing all around the state, a lot of them, their exposure and their experience in the great outdoors is in our parks. And so I think for a large number of the people that we represent, it's critical to make sure that our parks continue to be set aside and maintained and protected so that we all have a chance to experience nature, even if we don't have time or money to go up to a cabin on the lake every summer. And so I want to see a higher priority to parks and waters, and I don't want them to compete against each other. And so that's my only wish, that we can improve this bill. I wasn't prepared to go as far as Senator Roebling's proposal. And so I look forward to working with Senator Pogemiller to improve those aspects of this bill as we move forward through the process with negotiating with the House. But I do think, members, that we should vote for this bill today, and we should have a strong green vote for this bill and move it forward and start now to say this is the year we're going to establish that legacy for our state and for our children and grandchildren.
Further discussion. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. President, members. You know, we have a chance to invest in the future of the land of 10,000 lakes. This bill could help us protect the North Shore, the largest freshwater lake in the whole world. It helped us protect the largest unpolluted aquifer in the United States, in northern Minnesota. That largest aquifer used to be in Florida. Now it's in northern Minnesota. It didn't move. We have the chance to help protect the great rivers we have, the Mississippi, the Minnesota, the St. Croix, the Root, the Rum up north. We have the Red River, the North, the Rainy, the Big Fork, the St. Louis. We have 14 million acres of forest land in this state, 14 million. This year, passed and the governor signed an Environment and Natural Resources bill that appropriated $50 million to clean water and about $20 million to healthy forests. The problem is that's one-time money. The majority of it is one-time money. It's a finger in the dike. Members, let's save our water. Let's save our forests. Let's save it for our children and our grandchildren, the way so they can use it the way we have. I think we need to support this dedicated funding bill. Thank you.
Senator Chaudhary.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I want to start by thanking Senator Pogemiller for chief authoring Senate File 6. Over the last 10 years of debate on this issue, we have not seen as great a commitment by the leadership of this legislature as we have this year, not only to this constitutional dedication, but to the environment. And so I want to thank you, Senator Pogemiller, for leading this effort. I just want to reiterate that I believe that this issue does indeed rise to the level of a constitutional amendment. I'd like maybe members to reach into their pockets. Reach into their pockets and pull out a quarter. I have here the Minnesota quarter, the U.S. Treasury Mint that's stamped onto the 25-cent piece, the symbol of Minnesota. What is the symbol of Minnesota? It is a lake. It is a forest. It is a loon. It is two anglers in a boat fishing on a lake. And, of course, the statement, land of 10,000 lakes, imprinted, embossed for the entire nation to see the values of Minnesota and what it cherishes most. All of the debate about what symbolizes Minnesota, it is our environment. It is our outdoors. And it is an endemic part of our values. And I argue the most important, as this quarter symbolizes. But as in many of the things that we cherish most, you don't know what you got until it's gone. And over the last decade, thanks to people like Bob Lassard, Senator Sams, and others, we have started to realize that we are losing what we love the most. The land of 10,000 lakes, the headwaters of the Mississippi, the international destination of the Boundary Waters canoe area, the Gunflint Trail, and other places all throughout Minnesota. And the natural resources that support these places, the things that we challenge and cherish the most, and Minnesota only devotes 1% of its general fund budget to what it cherishes the most. And so we are losing, members, what we love the most, and I don't want to wait till I know to know what I got until it's gone. And just so we know how dependent we are on these natural resources. It's not just about having fun. It's not just about the pretty butterflies and the ducks and the long sunset gazes that we enjoy so much and provide us inspiration. We rely on these natural resources for our livelihood. Half of Minnesota's tourism gross domestic product relies on the outdoors, and the other half is the Mall of America. We rely on our outdoors for jobs, and any northern resorter will tell you how their business and how their jobs have been impacted by global warming. that the ice fishing season has been greatly shortened. The snowmobilers are no longer coming like they used to, and that affects their livelihood and their jobs. We greatly depend on jobs for our tourism. In fact, tourism has even surpassed agriculture as our gross domestic product. We rely on these natural resources. We rely and depend on this amendment for the future of our jobs and our economy. And I would like to address the veterans and the seniors. And I'd like to talk about a veteran by the name of Captain Winter. Captain Winter led Easy Company, better known as the Band of Brothers, in World War II, through Normandy, through Operation Market Garden, the Battle of the Bulge, and Bastogne. And what Captain Winter said was that when this is all said and done, I just want to retire to a piece of land and a piece of property and live the rest of my life out in peace. And my guess is that what Captain Winter has done on that piece of property, living his life in peace, is hunt and fish. And I think that a lot of our veterans want us. They want to hunt and fish. In fact, it's probably one of the things they long for most when they are away from home, is the ability just to come back and hunt and fish. And so, members, one of the best things we can do to support our troops who want to come back safe and sound is to not ruin the land and the water that they left behind, to let it be better when they come back than when they left it, so that they have the opportunity to hunt and fish and take their kids hunting and fishing. And I speak from experience, because my brother, who serves active duty in the U.S. Air Force, a veteran of Afghanistan and Iraq, both Iraqs, when he comes to Minnesota, he wants to fish and he wants to hunt. And he wants his little kid who he left behind for so many months at a time to have the same opportunities that they once had, that he has when he grew up in Minnesota. What about the Air National Guard camp on the shores of Fish Lake, where my cabin is? What about the veterans camp in Washington County that is specifically set up for veterans to come and hunt, to be able to come and fish? Mr. President and members, our natural resources are as important to our veterans, if not more, because they appreciate them more. And I hope that for the sake of them, we don't let them lose what they've got and long for what they've got until it's gone. The outdoors is the great equalizer. It brings together the veterans. It brings together those seniors and that Let's Go Fishing program that we have for seniors and veterans who don't have those opportunities. But there ain't gonna be no hunting and fishing for those veterans if there is no place to hunt. And most of our waters are unfishable and unswimmable. Tomorrow, when we initiate the great Minnesota tradition of walleye fishing opener, 40%, almost half of the lakes that Minnesotans will be fishing in are unfishable. Unfishable. And if they are, there's an advisory on being able to eat those fish. That's not acceptable to me, Mr. President, members. I think it is important to have this in our Constitution, because if it was easy, if our Constitution was easy, we would have done this a long time ago. My guess is that if you ask Bob Lazard how easy it was to work on this dedicated funding amendment, he'll laugh. This is the hardest thing he has ever worked on. This is the hardest thing that he's ever worked on. But we do things in the Constitution. We do many things in the Constitution because we value those things that can't fend for themselves. We put things in the Constitution like making sure we have equal funding for schools because those kids can't vote. We put things in the Constitution like our roads and highways because that bridge can't vote. And we put the environment in our Constitution because those 10,000 lakes don't vote. And so we put them in the Constitution so that we can protect them. The lottery, the gas tax, the taconite tax. And speaking of bad public policy, isn't it bad public policy that we let our waters degrade? Isn't it bad public policy that we have fewer and fewer open spaces? Isn't it bad public policy that we let our Minnesota's air violate the Federal Clean Air Act, as it is close to doing? That is worse public policy, members, than quibbling about the form. So I think we have the opportunity here to do great things. And I think we ought to seize that opportunity. Don't quibble about the form, but seize the opportunity that we have. And about the arts, yeah, I prefer that that we keep it to the outdoors, but I think we've shaped this bill to the point where it can be a net benefit to the outdoors for an entirely different community to become more and more appreciative of the environment. We have a political gap in this state. We have a political gap. People like environmentalists and hunters who should be working for the same thing are somehow at odds. And that shouldn't be. And I think if we bring hunting and fishing to the arts community, if we bring arts, more arts, to the hunting and fishing community, we can bridge a political gap that will help preserve the outdoors for many, many generations. So, members, that's the long and short of my comments, more long than short. But I urge members to support this amendment. I think it's a great opportunity for Minnesota, and I think it's the legacy that we want to leave behind.
Further discussion? Hearing none, the Secretary will... Senator Frederickson.
Mr. President, I just wanted to urge members to vote for this, and I think the I see. Senator Metzen giving on-the-floor advice to members. Senator Anderson made some very good comments about the stresses of budgeting for our natural resources. There are tremendous strains on our budget, as all of us know here. We know that 40% of our budget goes for E-12 education. We know that close to another 30% goes to health and human services, other vital state programs. It comes down to environment. What was appropriated in Senator Anderson's environment finance bill was less than 1.2% of our state budget. We know that's not enough to restore habitat, to restore our duck habitat, to try and bring our duck population back up. We know that's not enough to fund the clean water legacy. We know at a conservative estimate that's going to take $100 million a year. And we know that our cultural legacy is very important also. As I looked at our cultural legacy and our arts legacy before I supported the arts part, I asked for information from our legislative reference library. And there is a lot of history in Minnesota that pertains to the arts. You can find in our history books references to the arts that our German ancestors, our Norwegian ancestors, the Italian immigrants and the Iron Range brought to Minnesota. And it goes back all the way to before Minnesota was a state. And this is the 149th birthday of Minnesota. Our arts legacy goes back before that. So it very much is an arts legacy. And one way we can fund all of those three vital parts to Minnesota is with this constitutional amendment and with taking this argument to all the people of Minnesota and letting everybody in Minnesota join in this debate and ultimately pass this as a constitutional amendment.
So further discussion on Senate File 6. Hearing none, the Secretary will take the roll on final passage.
All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There will be 52 ayes, 14 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I would move that Senate File 6 be laid on the table.
On the motion to lay on the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I would move a brief recess for two purposes. One, to recognize a former member of the Senate, but also to appoint a conference committee.
Senate is in recess.
Mr. President, I'd like to recognize former Senator State Lessard, who is in the gallery.
Senate will come to order. Senator Pogemiller.
Is there a privilege report at the desk? And members, we're going to do the calendar real quickly here, and then we'll be done for the day.
There is a privileged report at the desk.
Senator Pogemiller from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends the following senators be and hereby appointed as a conference committee on Senate File 463, Senators Betzel, Scheid, and Ortman. Senator Pogemiller moves the foregoing appointments be approved.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, on motions then, I would move that we take up the Senate calendar.
Okay. On the Pogemiller motion to take up the Senate calendar, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. First bill, again, here we have seven kind of quick votes here. Stay seated, if you will. First bill on the calendar, number one, Senate File 883, the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 883, a bill for an act relating to anatomical gifts, adopting the Darlene Luther Revised Uniform Anatomical Gift Act.
Secretary will take the roll.
He did. Yeah, we got her.
Parasol. House senators, having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Be at 55 ayes and 9 nays. The bill is passed. It's held agreed. Second bill on the calendar, be Senate File 184. The Secretary will give Senate File 184 its third reading.
Senate File 184, a bill for an act relating to health, authorizing registered nurses to dispense oral contraceptives and family planning clinics, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Sparks. Secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and 1 nay, the bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Third bill on the calendar, Senate File 1823. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 1823, a bill for an act related to health professions, changing licensing requirements for physical therapists, etc.
Secretary, will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes, 0 nays, bill is passed and its title agreed to. The fourth bill on the calendar this afternoon will be Senate File 1360. The Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File number 1360. A bill for an act relating to game and fish, adding legislative members to the Game and Fish Budgetary Oversight Committee until June 30, 2009.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Fifth bill on the calendar, Senate File 1185. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 1185, a bill for an act relating to natural resources, modifying acquisition authority for state trails, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 61 ayes, 3 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. The sixth bill on the calendar, be sent a file 893. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate file number 893, a bill for an act relating to elections, moving precinct caucuses from the first Tuesday in March to the second Tuesday in February.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Being 55 ayes and 9 nays, the bill is passed and state agreed to. The final bill on the calendar, number 7, Senate File 445. Secretary will give Senate File 445 its third reading.
Senate File 445, a bill for an act relating to occupations and professions, modifying provisions for individuals operating X-ray equipment, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Having voted, desire to vote, Secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Mr. President, is there any other work at the desk?
That completes, Senator Pogemiller, the work at the desk.
Mr. President, I'm going to wait for announcements, but we will come in at 1 o'clock on Monday. At 1 o'clock, I think I'm going to look at the Greater Minnesota members. Does 1 or 2 o'clock make a difference on whether you leave Sunday night or Monday morning, or is 1 o'clock good enough for members? Okay, so it will be
4 o'clock.
So it will be. So, Miss, I would wait for announcements, and I think Senator Jungbauer maybe has an announcement.
Senator Jungbauer.
Yes, Mr. President, members, I have the announcement everyone's been waiting with bated breath for. Yes, people, get out your favorite recipes. We will not miss out on the Senate potluck, so plan for next Friday. Exact time to be later announced as we work through our schedule, but make non-stressful foods. But get out your favorite recipes. You can start preparing them so they're ready for next Friday. And yes, members, I will be bringing my famous homemade organic salsa. Thanks.
Oh, nobody really cares, but Senator.
And Mr. President, I promise I'll bring my rhubarb pies next Friday.
Now, we're not all going to announce what we're bringing, are we? Senator Rest, what are you bringing?
Thank you, Mr. President. The State and Local Government Committee will meet at 3 p.m.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate women, half an hour before session starts, so 12:30, we will caucus in my office suite.
Senator Boniff.
All Senate women, both majority and minority.
Mr. President,
we're the mid-caucusing, Senator Pogemiller.
Well, Mr. President, I was wondering whether you had to be a certain type of female senator, or whether all female senators were invited.
I think she said all female. Say Limmer. Where are the men going to meet?
Mr. President, all women senators.
Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Hey.
Before we leave here, I just wanted to mention the fire that is still raging up on the Gunflint Trail, and we have firefighters who are putting their lives at risk, and the Gunflint Trail has now been evacuated almost 40%, and I know Senator Bach is in close communication with a commissioner up there, and so I thought we should include them in our prayers over the weekend that this fire does get put out, and now I understand there's a second fire outside of Hibbing, and so let us also hope that they're safe and that we put these fires out with speed. Thank you.
Further discussion without objection. Senator Stump will be excused from today's session all day. Senator Sieben from 9 to 10. Senator Scheid from 9 to 1. Senator Vandeveer from 9 to 1:10. Senator Lynch and Corrine from 11:50 to 12. Senator Senjum, 2 o'clock on, and Senator Sparks at 2 o'clock on. Senator Day.
Mr. President, and for all my colleagues in here, first off, happy Mother's Day for the mothers that are in here. But also, there was something that I've thought about for a long time, and I'm really kind of sorry that Senator Senjum had to go do a TV show, so he's not here. But I, as 9 years as a minority leader, I want to compliment the majority leader and our minority leader, and especially the majority leader, for actually running a wonderful ship here. Things have happened on time. We've had a lot of arguments about the bills themselves, but I think you've done an absolutely splendid job getting our bills up here and our voting and the way the committee structure was. And I just, for 9 years as a minority leader, and I know that wasn't easy, and I went through some of the other majority leaders and it didn't work real well. So this, I'm sorry that I wasn't the guy working with you, and I know Senator Senjum, who is a absolutely wonderful minority leader, but I just wanted to compliment you, and I think that I hope the next week we all know it'll get kind of rough, but that's beside the point. That's just the game we've always been in. But up, you're doing a good job. Thanks.
Did you? Yeah, that's pretty nice. Did you want a recess so we could applaud you? No, we're not gonna do that. Denny Frederickson, I thought he might say something nice about two of us, but I guess we couldn't get it out of him. Senator Pogemiller.
Thank you, Senator. Members, you have worked hard. You have made it possible for Senator Senjum and I to try to keep things moving here because you've all been very courteous, and you've worked hard, so we appreciate it. Mr. President, I'd move that the Senate adjourn till May 14th, 1 p.m.
On the motion to adjourn, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.